Hare Hare Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. There is always some upheaval in the material world, which may be good or evil. One who is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one is in the material world, there is always the possibility of good and evil, because the world is full of duality. But one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is not affected by good and evil, because he is simply concerned with Krishna, who is all good absolute. Such consciousness in Krishna situates one in perfect transcendental position, called technically samadhi. So, but when one is absorbed in Krishna, then one's not distracted by duality, because duality is always what's going to cause a problem. Right? Means, because we may like one side or the other. Generally in duality, one of the sides we like, and the other we don't like. Right? You know, someone likes it to be orderly, someone likes it when it's not so orderly. Right? So, I remember going into one person's room. Somehow or another, we were in the house, and one of the kids, we went into the bedroom. I'm not sure. I think we were working out something on painting the or colors. Or I don't know what it was, but it was something. So we went into the room. So the room, it was, you know, the one person had the single bed, you know, the closet, the dresser, you know, standard kind of thing. But all of the clothes, they were spread, I mean, like completely all over the floor. There was only enough space between things to just step. The whole floor, the whole bed, everything was just covered like that. So he thought, this is crazy. So he picked it all up, you know, put it away. And then later when the kid came home, he was complaining he can't find anything. So this complete, what we'd call a complete chaos, to them it was, oh, they knew. The other pants are over there somewhere, and the shirt's over here, and the shoe, one shoe's there, and one shoe's over here. So they know where it is. You know? So they, the non-orderliness, they like. Well, someone else likes it to be nice and orderly. You know, so that's duality. So the point is, when one's not affected by that, because one knows it's all Krishna. Right? So you're only dealing with Krishna. So then at all times, all places, all circumstances, one's absorbed in Krishna. So that's samadhi. Yes?
We know that Krishna likes it orderly.
Yes, Krishna likes it orderly.
So it's still duality?
But why do you want it to be orderly?
Please, Krishna.
Then it's not duality. So therefore, if it's not orderly, you make it orderly. And if it's orderly, then you use it like that. So you're not happy or distressed or praising it or like that. In other words, the material arrangement is not what we are pleased about. It's the connection to Krishna. It doesn't mean that everything doesn't work out nicely, but that's why the spiritual world is so good. It's so well organized, because Everyone's doing it to please Krishna. They're not doing it because they, as a conditioning, like things to be orderly. You know what I'm saying? So there are persons who, they appreciate one of the particular qualities, right? And because of that, then they, how do you say, it's probably better because the wind is blowing to put them all the way back onto the red. It just gives that little bit farther back, so it maybe gets a touch higher before it gets to, yeah. A little bit. But that one right there has become Shanti's friend, that one. They put it on that, up that behind that column over there. No, not next to the plant. No, the other side, over there. Yeah. Yeah. Unless Shanti's going to feel bad now, his friend has gone away. Okay, so that's technically samadhi, because you're actually absorbed in the Lord without any problems, you know, being affected by anything here, like that. 258. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. The senses should be used only for Krishna's service. The senses are compared to venomous serpents. They want to act very loosely and without restriction. Right? Because that venomous serpent, it bites according to its whim. It's not that it should bite or not, because it should be only if it's defending itself or it's killing something to eat, but it'll bite you just because it feels like it. So it's there. Act very loosely and without restriction. The yogi or the devotee must be very strong to control the serpents, like a snake charmer. He never allows them to act independently. There are many injunctions in the revealed scriptures. Some of them are do-nots, and some of them are do's. Unless one is able to follow the do's and do-nots, restricting oneself from sense enjoyment, it is not possible to be firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness. The best example set herein is the tortoise. The tortoise can at any moment wind up its senses and exhibit them again at any time for particular purposes. Similarly, the senses of the Krishna conscious person are used only for some particular purpose in the service of the Lord and are withdrawn otherwise. Because otherwise, one's in an environment, so the sense, the in that environment is an opportunity to engage the senses. Right? So if we only see the opportunities, what we can do something for Krishna, then the senses are properly engaged. So when there's not, then they're withdrawn, right? So basically the do is engage them in Krishna's service. Do not is to not engage in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right? But until we're doing that because it's Krishna, then it's a rule. If you engage the sense like this, it's not good. You don't engage the sense like this, it's does that make sense? Like that. You take prasadam, that's good. Right? But if you eat just anything, that's not good. Right? So you're restricting on one side, engaging on the other. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's a rule, we'll do it. Because we know the rule is elevating. But ultimately, it's just, we're only interested in things connected to Krishna. So since you have to eat, then what's connected to Krishna is what we eat. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
We were talking about someone says, just surrender.
Just surrender.
And applying this principle, if he was just seeing the pleasure of Krishna, he could actually see what would be the best application for that.
Yeah, person. You know, in other words, like we gave the example, someone's, let's say, a cook, but they're not so good out in public. Not that developing some ability to function in public wouldn't be good for them, because as time goes and in their preaching, that would be very advantageous. You know, they'd be able to, you know, even using the cooking, be able to teach cooking and that, but you have, so you have an audience, a group, be able to work with people. You know, or in any case, just discussing Krishna consciousness and all that. So it will be an advantage, so it's not wrong that they develop, but at the same time as the amount of what the person could do in an inspired way for Krishna, and how much they might do not in that way, you know, by doing something else, it may not, they may do more for Krishna by following their nature than to avoid that nature. Does that make sense? So that's what has to be seen. But if it's a matter of, you know, the person, okay, in the kitchen he's a cook, but then he's also not thinking of Krishna, but by being, you know, out on Sankirtan for a while, he's definitely going to pray to Krishna. You know? So when he actually surrenders, then he'll be fit to cook. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So the person, the who is giving direction should be able to appreciate that and be able to see what would be the approach. Because it may be that engaging with somebody is not their nature temporarily, but to just put them on that and think, oh, they're doing it now so then they can keep doing it. But then that's okay. You have to know when it's like it's they're reluctant or it's something that they're having great difficulty doing. You know? Reluctance is one thing. You know, people are reluctant about anything new or different. But if it's a matter of they're really having trouble absorbing themselves or getting very distracted, then you have to adjust. So it's not a matter of they didn't make it so they're not sincere. No, it was means they weren't properly engaged. Right? So technically, then the other person wasn't. Now, if they are comfortable in cooking, they're engaged in that, and then they decide to leave the temple and go open their own restaurant, then you could say, that's not sincere. If they had full facility, they were comfortable with everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have to be able to judge all those. That's why the being able to analyze it is important, because there's so many considerations. Right? We want to make something very clear and easy. And, you know, which is nice. You make it as clear and easy as possible, but not at the expense of anything that's important. Right? Especially if it's not an emergency. If it's an emergency, of course, you have to do what's immediately necessary. It doesn't matter what happens. You know, but if you have time, then you would take that time. So it might take a little bit more time. You want to do something in a week. It might take a month. But the point is, you get it done in a week, and then after a month, there's a problem again. The other one will take a month to accomplish. But having done it in that month, then it may last for a very long time. So actually, pragmatic, you know, you're being practical, means it's just how big you're seeing. Right? Does that make sense? Kids are being practical, right? Isn't it? They're using what's available. They're out in the backyard, there's a stick, you know, there's you know, some other few things. That's what they use. They pick it up, and, you know, on the terrain that's there, and what they feel like doing, they get it done. But an adult will see, well, that's, you know, they're not really accomplishing anything. Right? You know, they're not seeing all the vast armies and all what's happening there, you know, like that. Or, you know, Barbie got married for the 20th time. You know, so I mean, you know, important stuff. You know, so, but they'll consider, because there's longer term plans. You know, the kid wants to do something now. The parent wants to do something, but it'll take them a year to do it. So they consider themselves more mature, more developed. So it should be the same way, as the administration understands that if something would be better by doing it longer, but it's not due to an attachment, it's due to a proper understanding, then they would apply themselves in that way, rather than do something temporary and then having to keep going through so many difficulties. Does that make sense? Yes.
I just thought it was interesting. Krishna uses the tortoise example.
Krishna uses the tortoise, yes.
It's just like we have six senses. The turtle has four limbs, a head, and a little tail.
Yeah. Oh, that's why he says it's the best example set here in is the tortoise, right? That's why the Shastra picks these, because they're actually very good. Because there's things that because Krishna defines it, he knows the nature of them and what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know? So like that, then it's...
General question, we are quite a finishing of the part 3, which is
This is part 3, Prayojana. We've got some on the Abhideya Prayojana. There's a
four. We use the second chapter. We use the second chapter as the Prayojana.
Means that there is elements in everything that is there. It's just a matter of how you approach it. Because these same verses are used in the previous chapters also, looking at it from that angle. But in other words, in any one situation. Someone, let's say someone's doing something, but to do it, they had to have knowledge. So that means they had to analyze the field. So that would be Shankarshan, right? Then in analyzing, they see, okay, what results they could get. That's Prayojana, right? Then they become inspired, right? So then they make their plan, which is still Sambandha, but then they are then applying it as Abhideya. But they're applying what has been there as Sambandha, the knowledge of Sambandha and the knowledge of Prayojana. Right? Then when you get to Prayojana, you have the results, but it's based on, again, what was the field, how it results and the activity. You know what I'm saying? So everything's always connected, it's just what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? Like you say, you have dinner, so it's a complete meal. Right? But at different points in the meal, something's prominent. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that's the... Like, let's say you're still sitting at the table, you finished eating, and now you're just talking. But you'll still consider it part of the meal. But you're not eating anything, you're just talking. Does that make sense? No? You know? I mean, if somebody just, you know, how you say, you invited someone out for dinner, you know, you hear a knock on the door, you open the door, they just walk in, Hari Bal, walk straight in, sit down, you know, eat everything, stand up, wash your hand, and walk out. You consider that was strange. But technically, they ate the meal. You invited them for a meal, they came over, ate, and left. Right? Isn't it? So therefore, the discussions beforehand, discussions afterhand, are considered part of the meal, but they're not technically eaten. You understand? So the meal includes all the different aspects. So therefore, the Sambandhana Abhideya Prayojana is how to analyze the three aspects of one thing. So it's not that they're three separate things. They're three aspects of one thing. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that therefore, you may find that these different verses get used, you know, all over the place. Because here it's pointing out is that the person who's obtained that, he has these qualities. Right? Well, the other is that you have to have these qualities to situate yourself in Krishna consciousness. Or you have to have these qualities to perform the activity of Krishna consciousness. And one who has attained the goal has these qualities. Does that make sense? Because if we say it from one side, we don't catch it. But we say it from a few different sides, then... Does that make sense? The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, 259, though this taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experience in a higher taste, he is fixed in Krishna consciousness. So, well, by following the don'ts, right, or the do's, you're restricted in the senses are restricted. So there may be something that you would like to enjoy, but you're not because of the restrictions, right? So that will always be the taste is there. But when one gets a higher taste in the engagement of the senses, the taste for the lower goes away, right? So that's the idea, is that the do's and don'ts are just to get one properly situated, right? That's why it's saying is here is that one is properly situated, but one may have a taste, but we still consider them situated in devotional service, right? So therefore the neophyte is practicing devotional service. Right, or someone has a distraction, they're still situated properly. That's why the form is there, because there will be restrictions. Right? You know, it's like you want the kid to go to bed, you know, so the first thing is to get them into the bedroom, right? And then into the bed. So that they're in the bedroom, in the bed, they're rightly situated. They're just not sleeping yet. They're still crawling around and this and talking and all that. But you'll say at least it's progressive. You wouldn't consider, no, it's the same as being in the living room. Right? Oh, no, but if you do this, then you're as good as not even being a devotee. It means devotees, they say stuff like this. They like to create, you know, and how you say, you know, an environment or something like that. So by continuing that by engaging in the Krishna conscious activity, right? Means the do's and don'ts make it so that you'll engage in the Krishna conscious activity. So getting a taste for the Krishna conscious activity, then you're fixed. You understand? So you have the two aspects. The rules and regulations make it so that you're situated so that you can engage in devotional service, right? Though there's still material taste. But by practice, one gets a taste for the Krishna conscious aspect. Then you're actually fixed. Do you understand? You could also take it that since the second chapter is a summary of the whole Gita, this is the end of the second chapter, so then it is giving the conclusion aspects of the whole book. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. The process of restriction from sense enjoyment by rules and regulations is something like restricting a diseased person from certain types of edibles. The patient, however, neither likes the such restrictions nor loses his taste for edibles. Similarly, sense restriction by some spiritual process like Astanga Yoga in the matter of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Jhana, etc. is recommended for less intelligent persons who have no better knowledge. But one, yeah, so we can see that this is must be near Prayojana, because before we were saying how nice these things are, and now we're saying, you know, for less intelligent. Right. So now we know what it takes for a yogi to be able to do this, and the focus and the, you know, the everything. So if that's less intelligent, then what does the Vedic mean by intelligence, right? Rather than, oh, they're less intelligent means they're stupid. No, these are very smart people. But they're less intelligent compared to someone who actually understands the Vedic purpose. But one who has tasted the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness no longer has a taste for dead material things. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. We understand the two go together. Like we were saying before, is that on the Brahman platform is that you have the quality and you have the forms and actions that attain it. Right? So the ones attain the other. Right? And they're expressed through that. So the rules and regulations that make it so that you are engaging in the thing that you can get an actual taste from. Right? They're restricting one from something that you have a taste in that's not actually a real taste. It's temporary taste. It moves around. You have it today, tomorrow you don't. But one, you get a taste of Krishna consciousness. It goes, so that's what he said. In the course of advancement of Krishna consciousness, no longer has a taste for dead material things. Because we think it's the material thing that's alive and that's giving us the taste. But actually, it's dead matter. So it's not giving any taste. But it's being a vehicle for Krishna and his qualities. So what we're tasting is Krishna, but we don't attribute it to Krishna. Because if we did, we turn our attention to Swayam Krishna. Right? You know, his pastimes and what he's doing. But we focus on the point at which we're getting that taste through, which is through the medium of the dead matter. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, the person brings some drink in a jug, right? And then pours out the drink, you know, into your glass. You drink the drink. And then you comment how great the stainless steel glass and jug are. They have such a nice flavor. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? And, you know, according to tradition, then a particular drink goes in a particular kind of container. You drink it in a particular glass, right? You know, it's just like in the West. All your different kinds of alcohol, they have a different glass that you use. You know, if it's a soft drink, it's a completely different glass. Or, you know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the containers they bring it in, the containers you take it from, and you're saying, wow, I've always liked this particular shape of glass. It has the best flavor. You know, I prefer that. Others like the other one, but, you know, I really like this. You understand? That's what's going on in the material world. We think it's that container that is actually giving the flavor. But it's not. It's that it affords the opportunity through which you can put that particular drink. You know what I'm saying? Because if you brought a plate, then you wouldn't be able to appreciate the drink, you know, unless you like, you know, wet clothes. You know what I'm saying? You understand? That's the whole point. So it works that way. Does that make sense? You know, and so somebody's into that. Somebody else is into, you know, something more solid. So therefore, then, you know, instead of it being in a pitcher, you know, or some other kind of thing, it's on a plate or in a shallow bowl or something like that. You know, and it's, you use these, you know, something to serve it with like that, and then you eat it with something else. So, you know, others are into these pitchers and spoon and glasses and that, but I much prefer, you know, the plates and forks and spoons, you know. Like that, I think the taste is better, you know, something more solid. Yeah, of course, the other's nice, it's fresh, or this really has some substance to it. You know what I'm saying? If we had a whole group of people that were sitting around talking like, you'd think these guys are crazy. Right? No? And they would be thinking, you know, how is it that you see something beyond what they see? You know? Like that. So that's when the liberated souls come to this world, and we're so amazed how they can control their senses, and that it's not a matter of, it's like, it's not even something they consider. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Descriptions
are only good if the one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. Is
that meaning that people that don't want to follow the rules and regulations, maybe they're not so wanting to be Krishna conscious?
Could be. Can be. It means they don't want to be, or they want to be, but it's so much trouble doing it. Just like, you know, you'd like to have $1 million, but the amount of work that you'd have to put into it and all that, you may not be so inspired, right? So there may be that aspect. You know, so that just means they don't really understand.
Sometimes I come across some devotees that they just can't be bothered with all the rules, whether it's like it's overwhelming.
Yeah, so then that's because, that means they say they're overwhelmed by the rules and regulations. Technically, it means they're overwhelmed by material desire. And so by following the rules and regulations, it restricts the material desire, so therefore they feel that there's no engagement. There's no, you know, what do you do? You can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do, you know, so you had to, how you say, you know, this person's like, you know, I mean, this kind of mentality is, you know, Acharya then would be, I think it was Ramakrishna then, because there were so many rules like that. When you pass urine, because you don't pass urine on a walkway, right? Because people are going to walk in it. Not on a plowed field. Because if it's plowed, it means someone's going to do something there, or one that's growing things. If it's just a fallow field, it doesn't matter. Like that. You know, not towards the sun, right? Because one, people can see, and two, the sun has to look at it. You know, not towards cows, out of respect to them. Not towards a group of people, right? Does that make sense? You know, you're not standing up. You should be squatting down. So, so many rules like that. So now, then, he had to pass urine, and there's so many things. So then standing up, hopping on one leg, and spinning in a circle, he was passing urine. Because there's so many rules, so therefore, you know, how can we find like this? And so he's considered a great, you know, intellectual and saintly person because of this realization. I'm not sure. They don't continue the story to say who had to clean up the mess. But in any case, this is one of the stories of his greatness, you know, like that. That makes sense. So, in other words, it's because it's due to the mode of ignorance. So it's always what we think it is. It's the opposite, generally. We think these are overwhelming and I'm nicely situated. No, you're overwhelmed so much that being in that actual state for a spiritual state, you don't feel you have anything to do. It's empty for you. Right? Because you're not seeing its connection to Krishna. So until you see the connection to Krishna, you follow as much as you can. Because unless there's inspiration, you're not going to do anything anyway. So that person will go on in their identity. And like that, but Maya has a good way of, you know, she knows how to deal with you. So what will happen is at some point, then you'll get frustrated. then you might reconsider all those rules and regulations, you know, because they'll be helpful in attaining Krishna. Right? So if today they're too distracted, that's why it says don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. It means if they're too, it's too much for them, just leave it. It doesn't matter, because what they are doing, they're absorbed nicely there. You know what I'm saying? They can't follow all these little things, the cleanliness or this or that or anything like that. Then don't bother them if they're engaged in something dynamic, you know, something progressive. Because then these other things distract them, and then they can't focus because it's just too much for them, because, you know, they've never thought about these things. So therefore it's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, you see some person has purity, they understand very well, but not necessarily cleanliness. Another's cleanliness very well, not necessarily purity. Some, you know, neither of both, you know, so you get all four. So whatever, if they're engaged, don't worry about it. If you can say something and it'll, okay, and they can add it, nice. But if you say something and it doesn't work, leave it. Encourage what is actually going on, what is actually Krishna consciousness. Because by getting a taste there, then all the other things have a meaning. Or by becoming purified by the process, then these other things will have a use. You know what I'm saying? The idea is to catch it somewhere. So we'll always tend to push where we are comfortable. Right? Because if we're doing whatever we're doing, that's the perfection. You know, whatever someone else, if they're doing something different from that, then that's a problem. But if they're doing what you're doing, then it just confirms yourself. You know, so when you say, oh, everybody's doing it, means there are a few other people other than myself who are doing what I think. So therefore, what I'm doing has been confirmed. Right? So it's not actually that everybody's doing it's important. No, that there's other people doing what I'm doing. That's what's important. Because there is a huge amount of everybody who's doing something that I don't do. But I don't consider that everybody. Those are the weirdos. You know, you may have a whole country full of them, but they're weird, you know. Does that make sense? Footnote 63. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3:31-38. Instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Nivartate, 2:59, holds true. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. That is testified to by Yamunacharya. He says, Since I have become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there is attraction for a woman or a memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. End quote. When we are attracted by Madan Mohan and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditioned life, namely the beauty of immaterial woman, cannot attract us. So here's the, you know, taking that to the practical application. When you're attracted by something in Krishna, then these other things don't attract. One's more attractive than the other. But it's also that, you know, portion of a portion of a portion very removed is what you're actually attracted to. So if that's so, if one is so attracted by that, why wouldn't one be attracted by more? Right? It's just like saying, oh, you know, you have this little gold ring and that's so attractive, right? But let's say I have a room that's just full of gold, shiny gold, right? One would naturally be attracted more if you understood that this is gold. Does that make sense? You know? But if you think that, let's say, that's, gold bars, and this is a gold ring. So you say, well, no, I can't be attracted to that because it's not round rings with holes in it, right? Like that, it's chunks. But if you actually understand, I'm attracted to the gold, because if I give you the same shape in the ring, but I make it out of iron, you're not going to be impressed. Hmm. Right? Yeah? No? Okay. So that's the point, is if you actually understand it's gold, you'll be attracted by more gold. Right? So if you actually understand that that's Krishna, then you'll be attracted by that complete form. Does that make sense? Because it's not what's here.
And when we see the devotees after practicing for a long time being attracted to Krishna, still go away due to some...
It's just, you know, it happens.
Because they stop being attracted by Krishna? Or
no, it's just that they allowed something else to come up, that's all. It means weeds. When weeds are there, the creeper is still there. Right? So it's not that the creeper is any less. So that advancement that they've made is still there. So technically they are more advanced than us. But the point is they may not be applying it or taking advantage of that. The weeds have grown up so much that looks, because the weeds look similar to the plant. You know, that's the thing, is it looks the same. That's why we have to be able to analyze, so we can tell what's the creeper and what's a weed, because they look the same. Right? So you have to be quite expert. Like if we look at a field of rice, you know, the water's all there, all the rice is there. We see people going through, and they're pulling out sometimes about half of what's there. But it looks the same, because rice is grass, and the weed is grass. But it's a different kind of grass, so they can tell there's a slight difference in the shine, or a little in the shape, or the edge, or, you know, the texture. So they can tell the difference, and so then they pull those all out. But for us, they look the same. So that's why with training, we can tell what is a weed in devotional service, and what's not. Because right? Otherwise, we'll take one to be the other. Okay. 260. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who's endeavoring to control them. This is the second time this happened yesterday. It's whatever was the next sentence is what your question is. And so that yesterday also is exactly the same thing. That, or it's just that's the natural form of it, so that's the natural question.
Maybe you know. She meant the next paragraph.
Oh, what about that? No, we're coming up to that. No. Let's see what he does when he doesn't have the purport and sloka. Yeah, okay. Okay, they forcibly carry away the mind, even a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So, man of discrimination. So it means there's right and wrong, what's the do's, don't do's, he's fixed, you know, he's practicing that, like that. It doesn't necessarily mean that attachment to Krishna is so great. Because when that's there, then these things become very easy. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease material engagements. Because even someone gives up karma and practices yan, technically, it means we technically would say that it is... Not material, right? We'd say it's spiritual. But factually, in comparison to devotional service, it's still material. Right? So that's the point. You can't give up. You may give up a lower aspect of the material for a higher aspect of the material, but you're not going to give up material till you've tasted or engaged in transcendental. Does that make sense? That's the... There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishwamitra, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment. Although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice, and of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements. So here again, it's just bringing out, if one has that taste, then this will be very easy. But if one doesn't have, then there's always going to be difficulty. So that's why we are, you know, determined, we understand why we follow the do's and don'ts and try to situate ourselves there. But we should not think that just because that's been done, now we're Krishna conscious. No, Krishna conscious means being conscious of Krishna. Right? And to do that, we need to follow the rules and regulations. So if we only are following the rules and regulations, think that's the Krishna consciousness. No, that's a assistance to Krishna consciousness. So it's important, but it itself is not the Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
Taste comes on its own. We cannot practice the taste.
Practice taste.
Kind of a feeling.
Yeah, no, taste comes on its own.
So we can only practice.
But you can practice, like, let's say, you want to develop a refined taste. So what should you eat? Refined things. So if you want to develop a taste for Krishna consciousness, therefore you have to be constantly in touch with Krishna consciousness so that that taste will develop. Right? Because let us say, you give someone who doesn't have a refined taste, you give them something simple and something refined. To them, it's not much difference. Right? But with time, and as you point things out, then they'll start to catch it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the idea in Krishna consciousness. You practice the process of tasting, but the getting that taste comes with time. As we are purified, then the higher taste comes. Right? Because you have a lower taste, it means it's not purified.
And for an advanced person, even small thing can cause his. For an advanced person, small anartha, small weed, causes a big havoc. And for a person who's not so advanced, like not so refined, some things go. He can go without falling down because he's in such a poor condition.
Yeah, because he's already in the falling. It means it's like if you're already laying on the floor, then you know you're not going to have, you know, if you roll over, you're not going to probably bruise yourself much. You know what I'm saying? But if you're standing up and then your, you know, face comes in contact with the floor, there may be some damage. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing. The other thing is there's so much distraction, there is no focus, so you don't actually get very far with it. You know, like the materialists, they're dedicated to sense gratification, but they don't actually get very much of it. Right? You know, you don't have to, you're not restricted by having to cook and go to the market and do all these different things. And so they end up with fast food. Now, how refined is that? How good is that? So even though they're committed to sense gratification, the actual, what they're obtaining is very meager, very, I probably said, pale. You know what I'm saying? One is that he said dead, because it is dead, right? What you're dealing with is dead matter. But there is some of Krishna's potency comes through it, but it's very pale. You know, the potency is pale, and the medium is dead. You know, while Radha and Krishna, that substance, and it's unlimited. So it's... Is that, okay. So then the focus is more. That's why sometimes it can be more of a distraction. You know what I'm saying? You had that, what was his name? Subari Muni. Right? There's some fishes. And so then he becomes distracted because his focus is so great. So one thing, when it goes on the fish, then it's so much. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it seemingly such a small thing can disturb. But it's only, it's not, they're just not being, but it's because of their focus is greater. It's also, we're not so disturbed because we have 100 things that distract us. You know, so you can't fully get into one because the others are around. So you're trying to get everything at once. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, there's a point the man wants to make, but he hasn't found the right moment, you know, because, you know, the wife is focused on something or grumpy or this or that. Then some opportunity comes along, she's very happy. Like that, right? It's just going good like that. So he thinks, this is the moment when I can now mention it. So by mentioning it, now it puts her in a bad mood. So he mentioned it, but it didn't actually work. So it's, you know, it gets the opposite results. So that's, you know, so that's the things we want to do everything at once. You know, so that's the problem. So when, you know, one thing's happening, you deal with that. The next thing's happening. Does this make sense? Yes. Yeah, so there also then in these great sages is that there's very few anarthas there, right? So if one focuses on one of them, there's no other distraction, so it can get more intense. Does that make sense? So we have to understand is that this platform that advanced devotees fall from is not the platform we're falling from. People like to make it sound like it, but it's very, very different. You know, like we said, you know, Bharat Maharaj is seeing the soul of the deer, but he understands this, the soul identifies with the body of the deer, so it thinks it's a deer. He doesn't think it's a deer. He knows it's a soul, but because it thinks it is, and it needs a mother, right? If it was full grown, you don't worry about it. But it needs a mother, so it's an anxiety, right? And an advanced soul doesn't want to see other living entities in anxiety. Therefore, he takes care of the deer as the deer would think it should be taken care of. Right? And so when it gets lost, then he's also thinking of the deer. Now it's a storm. It's still small. It'll be scared. It'll be this. So he's going out to find it just so it won't be upset. But because he's thinking of the deer at the time of death, he becomes one. So his platform of falling is not otherwise. Why isn't just any old person's fall down is in the Bhagavatam? But you only hear Bharat Maharaj's is really mentioned, you know, as a whole discussion. Right? Vishramita is brought up here and there, but not as the main discussion. You are saying Mahabharat, then Vishramita features. So you know. Yes.
How should we think of suffering of others to not fall down if we try to see this way?
Please remember that it's the Krishna part of it that's important, not just the compassion part. The compassion is because they're connected to Krishna. But, yes?
I was just thinking that it's so important to be engaged in devotional service. So is it up to our endeavor to find that engagement, that we get fully engaged, or is it that we have to get help from others to make sure we're fully, getting more engaged?
Means I would say both. Because unless you're aware, how does others, you know what I'm saying? If you're aware, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
Right? And then to confirm that, or then you consult with others.
Yeah.
You know, so it's both. You can do all of that.
All right, the lower taste is coming from identity, right?
Lower taste, yeah, because we identify with that. Yeah, identity and just practice. So we're just used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so it takes, you have to redo a practice too. But that's how Krishna consciousness is so much more powerful. In one lifetime, you can become Krishna consciousness, change the taste. Well, what we're dealing with is the taste of being in the material world since time immemorial. But it still takes some practice. You know, like that. You know, just like, let's say, we have shifted the door, right? We came to the house, it's an old house, and the house was one of those houses where, you know, things were just built onto, you know, like that. So, factually, it would be much better if the door was moved. So you shift the door. But, by habit, you'll still go to that place where the door used to be, even though it's in an improved place. But, by keep going to the other place, then you forget about where it used to be. Right? Does that make sense?
Many say that in order to develop this higher taste, we have to be more absorbed in the Krishna Leela, reading Krishna book, thinking about those pastimes.
It means that is there, but the point is what does Mother Yashoda do? She gets up in the morning, what does she do?
Starts thinking about how to cook for Krishna.
Yeah, how to cook for Krishna, get him up so he can go to the Goshala, prepares his bath, when he comes back, then, you know, bathes him. Like that. So practically what they do, you could say, is Pancharatrik would be what they do. Right? But it's not because of the rules, that's because of the natural, you know, how you say, rasa. You know what I'm saying? So if that was the only thing, then that would be the main focus. But the point is you talking, that's one thing, but getting others, that's even more. So therefore, you know, distribution, preaching, the Sunday programs, all these different things, is so that others are doing it. You know, so that's also important. So just sitting around doing it yourself is nice, but it should be as if it's such a good taste, you would want others also tasting it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, I'm sitting in a train station, right? And I'm eating something, and it's really good, right? But, you know, there's nobody I know around, so I just eat it myself. Okay? Now let's say I'm sitting somewhere else and there's some friends and I pick up something to eat and it's really good. What am I going to do? Yeah, tell my friends, hey, come over here, check this out. You know, it's really good. Right?
If you're enjoying it, you might keep it for yourself.
Oh, I said friends.
If you have enough.
You know? Then if you are tasting it and there's an opportunity to share it, but you don't, then we wouldn't call that selfless. We call it selfish. Therefore, just sitting alone and practicing bhajan, then by the acharyas is considered as selfish. Okay? They're talking about sadhakas. They're not talking about perfected souls who, even just by their, it's like it said, just by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj sitting on his own and chanting, it purifies the whole universe. So it makes the opportunity for others to become Krishna conscious easier. Right? So then other preachers can preach and their environment's better because of it. But we're talking about those who come to the perfection. Sadhakas, then it's considered selfish. Like that. Because unless they follow the rules of sharing, how will they share? Right? That's one thing. Right. So that's why the Bhagavat aspect of hearing and chanting is the predominant. But that's okay. Now let's say if that's the predominant, that's the only thing you have to do, we won't do other parts. That's okay as long as all you're doing is Bhagavat. You know what I'm saying? And then if you're dealing with Pancharatrik, worshipping the deity, and doing that, between those two, that's very strong. That's a very good position also. Mm-hmm. But let's say one's a family person and one has one's job and this and that, and one only talks about, you know, only the service of only hearing, chanting, you know, Bhagavatam, and especially Krishna's pastimes, that's the only thing that's important. All these other things aren't important. That's unrealistic. Because if that's true, then why are they engaged in all their family activities? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if you're being practical in family life, what about other people who are being practical and connecting that to Krishna, and therefore it becomes devotional service? Now to criticize their using of your same attachments in Krishna's service when you're not, and then because you'll sit down and read, you know, Krishna book, and they're doing some other service that's engaging the senses, then to consider yourself superior. You know what I'm saying? That wouldn't be fair. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so engagement in Krishna consciousness you can cease. Otherwise, just by, in other words, we will take it that if we follow a spiritual program, then we will become Krishna conscious. No, by being Krishna conscious, you'll be Krishna conscious. The spiritual program is necessary because it takes you away from being not Krishna conscious. They're saying, so the spiritual regimen is of value because it allows for you to be Krishna conscious, but it's focusing on Krishna consciousness that makes you Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah. 261. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. The senses can be controlled only by devotional service. That the highest conception of yoga perfection is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse. And unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride, and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as the sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. The king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.18.20. King Ambarish fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue and tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where the temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a Matpara devotee of the Lord. End quote. The word Matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become Matpara is described in the life of Ambarish Maharaj. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, a great scholar and acharya in the line of the Matpara, remarks, Madbhakti Prabhavena Savendriya Vijaya Purvika Svatma Drishti Shilabheti Bhava. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Okay. Footnote 64. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-2-3. O lotus-eyed Lord, generally those yogis who try to steady the mind experience frustration because of their inability to perfect the state of trance. Thus, they weary in their attempt to bring the mind under control. Therefore, O lotus-eyed Lord of the universe, swan-like men happily take shelter of your lotus feet, the source of all transcendental ecstasy. But those who take pride in their accomplishments in yoga and karma fail to take shelter of you and are defeated by your illusory energy. Right? So Durvasa, he was proud of his qualification in yoga, because where did Durvasa Muni go after the pastime with Ambarish Maharaj? What planet did he go back to tell all his friends? Yeah, he went back to Brahmaloka. Yeah, he went to Brahmaloka, where all the yogis are, to tell him how great a yogi Ambarish is. So in other words, he understood that the bhakti yoga yogi is greater than this Astanga yogi. Right? Though he was, you know, most accomplished. This was Durvasa. Durvasa is actually an incarnation, right? So, but the devotee is even greater, right? Because he was representing devotional service, while Durvasa Muni was representing the mode of ignorance.
And Ambarish Maharaj is engaged in the Pancharatrik process, it seems.
Yes, he's engaged in the Pancharatrik. So the Pancharatrik is simply a way to regulate that you'll always be engaged in Bhagavad activities. That's what the Pancharatrik, because Pancharatrik doesn't deal with what you do in your family life. Right? It deals with what you do in connection with the Lord. So that means all the activities of the deity worship, then you need to be chanting, right, associating with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, and living in the Dham, or the deity is in the Dham, right? Means it is the sacred place. So all the instructions are about those five. But the focus is from the perspective of the deity worship. Right? The Bhagavat will be from the perspective of the hearing and chanting, and then you include the others. Right? So all it is a formalization of those five main Bhagavat activities. Right, so then we expand it. You get 64. Right, so then it's the 64 items of devotional service. But of those five are the main. But if you look at it, the first 20 are so that you're established properly, so you deal properly with devotees, Vaishnavas, you know, and the place and paraphernalia of the Lord. Right, you have the proper attitude, proper spirit. But basically, what is it, 39 are all connected with deity worship, all with Pancharatra. Mm-hmm. Right? They're how to, you know, that you ensure that you will be taking part in the Pancharatra process nicely. Mm-hmm. So sadhana means, basically, for us, Pancharatra. Because mm-hmm. the Bhagavad, there is no sadhana. Bhagavad is spontaneous. Does that make sense? Or the sadhana is there, but it's called Bhava Bhakti. Like right. That. So before that, then we are conditioned, so we're following Pancharatra. Right? But when you get to Bhava, then there's no need to follow Pancharatra. Like that. But you may also, like Ambarish Maharaj, he did. It worked out for him.
Right. The discussion going on about this, the sadhana bhakti and the spontaneous
devotional service.
And one of the ideas is that by serving Lord Chaitanya, that will come automatically.
Spontaneous.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other part is also because there's a separate sadhana for that.
Yeah, but that's like saying there's cars and then there is a Mercedes. So there's a different method of taking care of cars and taking care of Mercedes. Right, you understand? Sadhana is the category. Within sadhana bhakti, you have vaidhi sadhana and raganuga sadhana. But they're both sadhana. They like to try to make it as its own entity. But that's misleading. Spontaneous devotional service means that you are naturally inspired to follow the rules and regulations, but not because the rules and regulations are what's important, because through those rules you can serve Krishna. So you're inspired to serve Krishna, but you still use the rules and regulations. That's why it's called sadhana bhakti. Right? So you have raganuga sadhana bhakti and you have vaidhi sadhana bhakti. But you don't have sadhana bhakti and then raganuga bhakti as two separate things. That's a misnomer. Total misnomer. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, and how we can be so strong on that point. One is Rupa Goswami defines it that way. But as far as practice goes, what is the example? The one singular example given by Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada quotes and everybody quotes as the practice of a Raganuga Sadhaka. What is his attitude? Yes. Yes. The example of a paramour. The wife has a paramour. So, what does she do?
Her duties very nicely.
Duties. She. In other words, someone who's on the platform of Raganuga Sadhana follows Vaidhi Sadhana better than a Vaidhi Sadhaka. Because then you'll never guess. You understand? So all these ones that are trying to show you that they're Raganuga Sadhakas and explain you like that and give up this Vaidhi Sadhaka, that's not Rupa Goswami. Who they're following, who knows? But it's not Rupa Goswami. It's not Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. It's none of our acharyas. They've made up their own path. Because the point is the Raganuga Sadhaka, you would have to actually technically be on that platform to actually understand that sort of their platform. Because where you look at it, because they'll look at it, and here's the point. You have to read Krishna book, you have to read these things, you have to be reading about Krishna's pastimes. Right? Isn't it? That's how it's presented. You have to. And when I use the word have to, what am I defining? I'm defining rules. So that is Vaidhi Sadhana. All they've done is made another form of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and then they call that spontaneous devotional service. No, it's just more Vaidhi. It's just emphasizing, you know, hearing Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna, and associating devotees, and not so much on the Pancharatra. That's all. So the deity worship is left out of their idea of their, Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. When actually it's just Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti that just drops Pancharatra, so there's no regulation. That's all. It's not Raganuga at all. That there's an idea that they want to be serious about it and move forward, that's good. For those who are serious, but for most of them, that they're just off the path. It just looks good, because I'm doing that, therefore I'm superior to you, who's just engaged in rules and regulations. The point is who gave those rules and regulations? Those rules and regulations, the sixth chapter of the Nectar Devotion. Who wrote Nectar Devotion? Yes, so then, Rupa Goswami. You know, Sanatana Goswami wrote Hari Bhakti Vilas. He's considered the guru of Rupa Goswami. You know, so the Goswamis don't have a problem with rules and regulations. But the point is the difference, the actual difference between Raganuga and Vaidhi is raganuga, you follow the rule because you like to, because it's pleasing to you. Either you have a taste or you understand it's pleasing to Krishna. Vaidhi, you follow it because you're supposed to. That's all. It's that simple. Rupa Goswami explains it like that. Prabhupada explains it like that. But these raganugis, you know, the so-called, they don't accept that. They say, no, it has to mean you're just reading about, you know, Krishna's pastimes, especially with the gopis. The Prabhupada gives so many purports about that. That's all. It's just that they're misrepresenting the line, because they're trying to take sadhana bhakti and make it that it's a category, and then there's raganuga sadhana. But then if that's there, then all that sadhana fits into what category? Right? If it's logical, what does it fit into? No, it's within sadhana bhakti, which means from shraddha up to asakti. You're either following by rules, or after nishta, you might be following by spontaneity. But before nishta, there's no question of spontaneous. Because he's just as spontaneous about hopping into bed with his wife as he is about sitting down and reading Krishna book. So where's the spontaneity? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's very much just as much part of his life. Because most of the time, these real hardcore raganuga sadhakas are grihasthas. You know? Brahmacharis, when they get fanatic, they generally get, you know, hardcore, you know, dry spiritual rules and regulations. Occasionally you'll find someone who is, you know, has that softness. You know, so they're just converting their grihastha, feeling wanting to do whatever they like, into that, applying that in devotional service. So they think that's more advanced. But it's not.
At what point in the process does Leela Smaranam become prominent?
When does Leela Smaranam become prominent? When you remember Leela. When you have a taste for it, and that, then you make it like that. It means, in other words, if you're reading Krishna book because you like reading Krishna book, that's spontaneous devotional service. If you're reading Krishna book because you have to, because that's spontaneous devotional service, that's not spontaneous. You read Krishna book because, without hearing about Krishna's pastimes, how do we know what the goal is? Because we see it's by being attached to Krishna as a person. So if we read Krishna book, we know who he is as a person. So when we do follow our rules and regulations, we know who we're doing it for. That's why we should be reading Krishna book. But to say, no, the rules aren't important, just reading the Krishna book, that's important. But that's a rule. No, spontaneous means the reason you're reading Krishna book whenever you can is because you like to. Right? And how you can test is, okay, the person's saying that all now. Come back after a few months. Are they still doing that? Right? If they are, good chance there's a taste. If not, then, you know, it was something they got into. Does that mean, you know, it's just, you know, something to do.
So that would also apply for that. Choose one member of the spiritual world.
You have to choose one member, but the point is first choose the spiritual world. First choose the Vaishnava community that Krishna is. You know, thing, like, who are you going to choose? What do you mean? It's just like that, I just choose. No. It means our choice is already made. Is Rupa Goswami. So then what's the problem? We're Rupa Nugas, so the choice has been made. But the point is you have to yourself make that choice. You know what I'm saying? You know, like the young man is there, he's part of God and country, but then when he grows up and then he feels, yes, I got to do something for God and country. He already was part of God and country, but now he's going to do something for God and country. So that commitment. So we're already Rupanugas, but now it's just a matter of you individually making that commitment that, yes, I'm going to follow what Rupa Goswami said. That's following the footsteps. You know, that's all. Because the point is how are you going to apply that? How are you going to apply it? You know what I'm saying? What's the sadhana for that? What's the problem with sadhana? Okay, let's say I've decided to pick Kundalata. Okay, so he's Krishna's cousin, and because being a cousin and a family member and being a girl, that means she can walk into Krishna's pastimes anytime, anywhere, because she's a relative. Girls generally get into everywhere, but, you know, even if it's not a place where the girl, like, let's say the gopis are there and they cook for Krishna and they're serving prasad, she can walk right out there and serve prasad. She won't be shocked. She's a cousin. What does she have? You know, what's the problem? Like that, she can go hang out with Mother Yashoda, she can go hang out with anybody in the family. So she can be right there, you know, except when the boys are out in the field. But even then, she could walk up and say, I want to talk to Krishna. And no one's going to say boo, because she's her cousin. So, okay, hey, your cousin wants to talk to you. Stupid. Like that, you know, it's like that. So you can go do it. Right? At the same time, being a girl, she can walk into the pastimes, the aspects with Radharani and the gopis. No problem, because she's a girl. So, I mean, hey, that's pretty broad. That's pretty limited, you know, like that. Now, okay, so now what do I do? You understand?
I'll fly.
Yeah, so, you know, what do you do? So that's the point. It's all nice talk. But what's the meaning? That's the problem. Is it's just talk. It sounds great, but okay, now do something with it.
Yes, very nice.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. So what are you going to do? So that's the thing. Is that, no, the process is you follow the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. What is the point? Their full surrender. Everybody in Braj just fully surrendered. That's what you want to look at. So that you can do. Then when you've attained full surrender, then there'll be a flavor to that full surrender that will be in line with, you know, a certain group and then maybe a particular individual. You know what I'm saying? But first you have to come, does that make sense? You know, you have to have the spirit. That's why Prabhupada starts in the beginning, having the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. So if you don't have the spirit of the Braja Bhaktas, then how are you going to follow in the footsteps of a particular person? And in any case, our footsteps, that's why it's Rag Anuga, following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. I mean, Rupa Nuga. And he's the one that defines Rag Anuga, so therefore, they're non-different. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, we have to accept his definition.
Yes. I heard this similar idea that since Raghunuga means to follow Raghatmika Bhakta, some propound the idea that since Lord Chaitanya is the Raghatmika Bhakta, so by following Vaidhi Sadhana under following him, it's as good or equivalent as performing Raghunuga Bhakta.
Means it is the situation of Raghunuga, but Raghunuga is Raghunuga.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So do we see that? Do we see what's happening here? Is there is the actual thing, and one is talking a little bit to the right of it, and one is talking a little bit to the left of it. Neither are actually talking about what it is. Because the point is if you simply follow Rupa Goswami's instructions of serving Lord Chaitanya, and you commit yourself to that, then that taste will come. It's automatic. Point is it's. It's just like this. Do the parents, you know, or the government, or well-wishers have to go to great endeavor to see that the child comes to puberty? No, it happens automatically. Okay. Now, when we say automatically, we'll say, oh no, but that's just there. But is their health there? Now, what if their health is bad? I mean, really bad. They don't eat properly, their health is bad, they're completely irregular. Will they come into puberty? On time? No, there'll be some delay. There'll be something going wrong. So you take care of their health, their mentality, their security, everything properly, and automatically it happens. So if you follow the process given by Rupa Goswami and given to us by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, then it will automatically happen. So he says, no, but it won't happen unless you know. But the point is we do know. Every devotee knows they want to go into, you know, Vrindavan pastimes and like that. So they do know, but how much do they know? Just like the little kid knows, the girl knows when she goes up she wants to get married, but it doesn't really mean much. When she's three, you know, Barbie and Ken are getting married. That's all they do, right? You know, they don't do anything else. You know, so that means that's there, but they don't know the details. So the point is that the concept is all that's necessary. You know, the point is if they're sitting around arguing over it, it means they don't know. It's like a bunch of 8-year-olds arguing over, you know, what it means to be a teenager. They don't know. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the point is it is automatic. But the point is it's there that you can be aware of it. But the point, who will be aware of it? The person who is. That's all. Raga Nuga is simply that there's an interest in it. That's why it's there. Like, why does devotional service come? Because there's an interest. That's the only reason. So that makes it, there's an interest in it, it develops. So by saying that there's an interest, and so by reading these things that may develop an interest, but it's still Vaidhi until the interest develops. So they'll try to say, no, this is the sadhana for developing it, but that's still called Vaidhi.
Yeah.
Right? And Vaidhi also already includes hearing and chanting about the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, just somebody may overemphasize this or overemphasize that. That's not, you want to catch a balance, what works for you, because what's going to work for you is what's going to work. Yeah.
Does it happen that type of service of those who have taste change? That,
does the type of service change? You mean type of service or quality of service?
I mean type.
Type. Why should it change? Why would it change? What would be an example?
I don't.
Yeah, so then that's the point, is that the type won't change, the quality will change.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, the boy is, you know, chasing the girls around the playground and pushing them into the wall, or and throwing you know, wads of paper at them, right? Now when he grows up and he understands that somehow or another girls don't really appreciate that, but he still, his attention towards girls stays the same. You understand? Just the quality of it changes. Right? You know, instead of throwing a piece of paper, now they bring him a flower or something. You know what I'm saying? Or at least the paper has something written on it and is folded up rather than wadded up and just tossed it. Yeah, you understand? So the quality changes. Because the point is you're just going to engage your conditioning. So it doesn't matter what it is. Conditioning being engaged in the Lord's service is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. If you don't conditioning some parts of body, you like more than others, and it becomes... You do it out of desire to do it.
Yeah, so then that... It's Vaidhi, but then maybe that aspect has some touch of what do you call it? Rag to it. You know, it's not like you're sitting there and you're Mr. Vaidhi and then suddenly bang, and then now you're Mr. Raganuga. No, it's a gradual process. You know, it may be quicker in some, slower in some. It doesn't matter. Because Vishwanath points out that one might even follow Vaidhi sadhana up to bhava. But at bhava, then he'll switch to raganuga. Because the rules aren't important anymore. Right? The knowledge and rules are important up to bhava. Because the point of them is to get you to the liberated platform. You know, just like wood produces fire. Right? You know, but the fire is burning on the wood. But when the wood is finished, there's no fire. So knowledge is there because there's activities that deal with the world that requires the knowledge to deal with it. But once the attachment to the material world is finished, the knowledge necessary for it is also unnecessary. Right? So therefore, even if one doesn't come to the Raganuga platform within the Madhyama position, it doesn't matter because one will come to it in the position of Bhava, you know, as an Uttama. So it's doesn't matter. So if from Nishtha it starts, nice. But if it doesn't, you know, if it starts at bhava, it also works. You know, so anywhere in between. It doesn't really matter. Is that what you're saying? Vritti. The next two verses describe what happens when the sadhaka fails to control his mind and senses. 260-263. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. Right? Because from desire comes need. Right? So that desire means this contemplation. So the spirit means you're contemplating in that mood of being involved. Right? And from such attachment, lust develops. Right? The attachment, then you want. Right? Because attachment is there. Then when that develops, then the lust, so therefore there's action. And from lust, anger arises. Because you performed the activity, didn't get it, so you get angry. Because basically speaking, you never get what you want. Right? You know? From anger, complete delusion arises. Right? Because anger is now back in the position of sambandha, so it's dealing with your identity. So now because of anger, you think this and that, so you don't look at the philosophy, don't look at the knowledge. So then you act not with the knowledge. So delusion. And from delusion, bewildered memory. Then you don't remember certain things. You know, somebody does something, makes you angry, you completely forget that, you know, maybe they were your best friend, or they did something for you, or you were in that same situation, and they did this for you, and now when it reverses, then you're not considering that. So that's bewildered memory.
There's a pollution of emotion in the mind, so you can't see.
Because memory is part of the intelligence. So the mind has to access it. So if the mind has already accepted something, it may avoid the process of going through the intelligence. Right? Because intelligence means what are your choices? And you've made choices in the past, what do you get? So we say an intelligent decision means, what does it mean? It means you looked at the past, I did that, it didn't work, but I did this, it worked, so therefore I'll pick the one that worked. Even though the one that didn't work is always the most attractive. You know what I'm saying? It didn't work. You know, the guy's sitting there, and there's the girl he's known, you know, he's grown up in school with, and, you know, she's not, you know, one of the cheerleaders, but she's nice, pleasant, you have good conversation, but he always wants the other, that fancy girl. And so he's tried again and again, and it never works out. And then he goes and sits with this girl and tells her how he's upset and this and that. And he gives, you know, nice support and everything like that. So if he was smart, he figured out, this is the one I should be with, not that one. Right? But that's the bewilderment of memory. He forgets that never works, and this always does. Does that make sense?
How do you understand the planning of Krishna? Like in the case of Parikshit Maharaj.
Planning of Krishna. Krishna's plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in the case of Parikshit Maharaj, his memory could be bewildered and he put snake in the neck of
Parikshit. Well, that's for the pastime. It's time for him to come back home. So therefore, you know, he gets a week, so if he's going to do it, might as well go out with a bang. You know? Like that. So he does that, but what happens is Srimad Bhagavatam is discussed and everybody from all over the universe comes to hear it. So it's a big event. You know, he could have just, you know, been in his room and just remembered Krishna and disappeared. That makes sense? But, you know, it does something big. So that the sages want to know, okay, Bhagavatam is such a perfect literature, how did it come to be spoken? So then the whole first canto is explaining all these different things. Because, right? You know, to understand Parikshit Maharaj means you have to understand, you know, what he did. I mean, means you want to know what he did, but who he is. He's, you know, part of the Pandavas, so where the Pandavas come in, and what's their whole thing. And so they're related to Krishna, so naturally if he's absorbed in Krishna, because otherwise why is Krishna coming? You know, who is Uttara, and you know, why is Krishna coming, and all this and that. So if you know who's who, then you can appreciate, you know. And then this happens, so then the Bhagavatam spoken. So it's a whole big program. When the memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. So then you don't discriminate at all. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Then again, you do whatever it is, that stupid thing you did that you wish you didn't do. You know, so that's by contemplating the object senses. So that means now here, right here in the beginning, because we know what we see the path. You contemplate the object of the senses, means the field, sankarsana, right? Then that means then you'll develop an interest in them and an attachment for them because you see what it can do. right? You contemplate the object means the object itself, what it can do, therefore, you know, how you would be happy with that. Therefore, you become inspired by that, then you develop attachment.
Oh, that's sambandha.
Yeah, it means, yeah, and that, yeah, like that. Like that. But when we say prayojana, it means it's touched on prayojana. It means it's not the actual receiving of the prayojana. And so then attachment develops, you know, and so then the lust is there. So then there's the drive to do. And then from lust means you endeavor, but there's always a impediment. So then you become angry, because anything from prayojana always comes back to sambandha. Right? And then from that, then your identity, your mental, all these things become bewildered. They become compromised. And so when you're not thinking now the process properly, then you fall back down into the material pool. So then you have to use intelligence. So this means that while contemplating the object senses, you contemplate the object senses in connection with Krishna, how the senses can be engaged in Krishna's service. That's what's meant by the senses are retracted. So then it doesn't go to the next, because you don't develop attachment for them for yourself. So therefore, there's no lust, but you may develop an idea, oh, hey, yeah, we can do this for Krishna. So therefore, the result, the prayojana has been touched on, so now you can endeavor for it, but it's for Krishna. So the contemplation is not the problem. It's a contemplation where it's not for Krishna. Right? So the contemplation, the senses, is because it's not for Krishna. But if it's for Krishna, then contemplating the objects of the senses, they're not objects of the senses, they're something for Krishna.
So in this case, failure won't bring anger, and then you have discrimination.
Yeah, the failure won't bring anger. It's just a matter, okay, what went wrong, and so therefore you'll analyze, and then you'll continue, and then you'll be successful. Okay. 10:30.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhakti Vinay ki,
Jai.
Janitai Gaurati.
Hare Hare.